Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. Chad and I are chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I will link to below this interview. Mark, to start us off here, let's just recap some of the market moves from this week, because it was a lot more volatile of a week, but we seem to be ending the week with a couple more constants, those constants being new all-time highs in U.S. markets. We'll get to that shortly, but the one aspect of this week that was catching a lot of people's eyes was the balance between the U.S. dollar moving higher. Now, at the tail end of this week, it is giving up some of those gains, and yields dropping. The 10-year was 1.2% and change, and that is also bouncing at the tail end of this week, but that environment where dollar up, yields down, what's the balance? What happened this week in those moves in those two markets?
Yeah, huh? What a crazy kind of week. You know, I've been in the camp that thought that in order for the dollar to sustain gains, uptrend, well, you've got a big budget deficit and trade deficit required higher interest rates. We didn't get the higher interest rates. And interest rates didn't just fall at the long end of the curve. And by that, I mean, you know, we saw the 30-year go down to 185, its lowest level since early February. This is it's a huge move at the long end, but also at the short end. You know, before the employment data last week, the December Eurodollar for 2022 was 56 basis points. Now it's less than 45. And so that implies that the market's still pricing in a Fed tightening, but not two moves next year. So what's happened? Well, on one hand, it looks like both markets, just looking at the positioning of the futures market, it does look like people, the net position, short treasuries and short the dollar. And so on one hand, you could just say this was a short squeeze. And it fits in with the facts that we know. On the other hand, something else might be going on. And that other thing that might be going on is, and we talked about this, I think, last week, maybe this reflation trade is what's being unwound. In the currency markets, those currencies that have done the best under this reflation trade are those that are going to be ahead of the Federal Reserve in the queue of adjusting monetary policy. Norway, the dollar block, and those were the weakest currencies in this past week. On the other hand, those currencies, those countries that are going to lag behind the Federal Reserve, like Switzerland and Japan, they had the strongest currencies. In China, we saw some weak PMI data, soft PMI data. I mean, the economy is still expanding, but it's clear that Chinese officials are getting more concerned. And today, ahead of the weekend, the People's Bank of China, the PBOC, announced a cut in reserve requirements, about 50 basis points, which they say will free up about a trillion RMB. Call it about, what would that be, $125 billion or so dollars, freed it up into for banks to be able to lend. And it just feeds on this idea that we're past the reflation peak, and maybe it's being encouraged by the outbreak of this Delta mutation, which is leaving Tokyo, for example, went back under formal emergency conditions. Big parts of Australia under emergency conditions, in lockdown situation. The UK is seeing an uptick in cases. The US is seeing an uptick in cases. And it's troublesome, and people are beginning to, I think, worry that maybe this is the end of this reflation trade.
Well, Mark, it does remain to be seen. We'll just have to let some more time go by whether it's the end of the reflation trade. But you brought up an interesting point as far as the dollar there over this week. There were a lot of people that have been short on the dollar for quite some time because the overall longer-term charts still lend towards the bearish side, and that's been the overall trend for the last year or so, with the exception of that big spike we saw during the pandemic crash. But the strength of the dollar this week had a lot of analysts and a lot of articles coming out all over the media saying that maybe the dollar is about to rally. But you had some good points about how all the other currencies played into this week, and you just alluded to it briefly there, but could you expand that just a little bit more as far as what some of the other central banks were doing, what some of the other countries were doing, and how that played into some of the dollar strength we saw this week?
Well, I think that, Chad, I think what we're seeing is the So sometimes I sort of see the dollar at the fulcrum, and sometimes the dollar is an actor. And after the jobs data, the dollar had its big reversal. It looked like the dollar was going to weaken off. And then it came flying back this week. But when you really look at what the performance over the last 5 days or so, you see that the currencies that have lost ground against the dollar were those currencies that the market was most long, betting on the reflation. Canada was the weakest currency, despite its bounce back today after the employment data. It's off 1.2% this week, the most of the majors, followed by Norway, down about 1.1%. And then you've got the Aussie and Kiwi, down about 0.5%. Those are the currencies that are down. And the currencies that are up this week, the yen is the strongest, up about 0.8%, followed by the Swiss franc. Both of those we know are laggards. And, you know, a lot of people talk about those currencies like the yen and the Swiss franc as safe havens. And I think that really misrepresents what's going on. Here's what I suspect is going on, and it helps account for this safe haven like language that people use. Not on the retail side, but among institutional investors, the rule is OPM, other people's money. And that is to say, when you buy something, you also short something against it. And the currency markets or the capital markets is relatively easy to do that. So a typical trade might be shorting the yen and using those proceeds from the short yen position to buy, say, an equity market. And maybe an emerging market equity market, emerging market equity. And what happens then is that as that equity goes south, you have to get out of the funding currency too. So the equity you bought goes south, unfortunately. You liquidate that, and now you've just got your funding currency that you're short, and you buy it back. And this is what a lot of institutional investors do, especially in the leverage community. So the reason that the yen and the Swiss franc tend to rally in a risk-off environment is not because people are buying them to go long, to store their money. What they're doing is covering shorts. And so I think that might help explain what's happened as well in the foreign exchange market, the big trade. And I think that there was maybe it was in the Wall Street Journal or maybe it was the Economist magazine last week talking about the carry trade. That was the kiss of death because that carry trade unwound. In the foreign exchange market, that carry trade is being short the yen, short the Swiss franc, long the dollar block currencies, or long the Scandies. And they unwound in a big way this week.
Interesting comments there, Mark, especially on the currency front. Let's also move over to U.S. markets and the broad strategy still being buy the dip, because early on this week, we did start to see some weakness, and even throughout the week seemed to be a bias to the downside, but sure enough, Friday, here we are. Markets are getting a buy, and S&P is, at least right now, back to new all-time highs. Just continuing on that trend that we've seen over the past about 3 weeks now. But again, there was a bit more volatility, so a bit more fear crept into these markets. What's your takeaway from the action this week? Do you pay any credence to that weakness? Or again, is the big takeaway buy the dip and closing at all-time highs for the week?
Yeah, I think that that's really the rule. I mean, if you think about, you know, as you mentioned before, the U.S. 10-year yield got down to below 125. What are you going to do? You got a little bit of savings. What are you going to do with it? Take that practically zero yield when you buy stocks. And I think that once again, you know, it looked ugly when we gapped lower on Thursday in the stock market. So it came back, closed near its highs, and then followed through ahead of the weekend. I don't know what to say. I mean, I know that I struggle too with this some of the stocks. Breakdowns that I'm in, and because I still have this perhaps it's naive faith that there's not many other places that Americans are going to turn to put their money. That the stock market on dips is really the buying opportunity. It's not to get scared necessarily.
Yeah, Mark, it's interesting that every time people come in and think, hey, this is the top of the market, and hey, it's looking pretty top heavy, it tends to surprise everybody again to the upside, at least the bears. But for most people, there's no other option. As you pointed out, no one's going to sit in bonds paying, you know, a point and a half percentage when they could be in the stocks. And it's also not a great savings environment. So people aren't going to throw their money in a CD or an annuity or a money market. You know, they're almost forced into the stock market. So my question to you would be, what do you think would change or derail this trend? What would it take to change the narrative where people always buy the dip, and I'm not sure what the alternative would be, but would it be rates that finally do start creeping up to a level where they pressure the stock market, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, maybe you're right, Chad. Maybe it would take a higher rate, so an attractive alternative. I don't know. I mean, I wonder if it's just, you know, even if we're not going to get, you know, even if I'm right and we had peak growth, it doesn't mean that we got a price in a recession immediately. And so maybe that's what it would take is a serious economic downturn. And the scenario that keeps coming back, I think, is the is what's going to happen with the virus. Not right now. I mean, now that in the northern, you know, the northern hemisphere, it's summer, people are outside more. But you know, the early testing based up as coming out of Israel, which was a highly vaccinated population, and it turns out that the Pfizer vaccine, 95% or something like that, effective previously, is only about 65% effective to avoiding the virus. This Delta mutation, it still doesn't give you, still prevents hospitalization. So it's a mild case. But I'm thinking you fast forward till the fall. Now, Northern Hemisphere, Europe, U.S., we're spending more time inside. And by that time, there might even be a new mutant behind the Delta, the next generation. Since so many people are not vaccinated yet, you've got to imagine that this battle between Mother Nature and us puny humans continues. And I think that our response still is lacking. And that's what scares me. What can cause this downturn is that it's not just economic, but what it would do, what a psychological blow it would do to people to have to be cooped up again next winter, for example. So I wonder if some combination, as to the scenario I sort of painted out last week about the doubling of the price of oil, the fiscal cliffs, the exhaustion of the pent-up demand, that these things couple with the rise of a new mutation, and maybe that's what it takes to derail which is seems to be like a gravity-defying stock market.
It really is. Yeah, the market has just continued to move higher, and it's really been not paying attention to a whole lot of data. And sometimes bad data has been taken as positive because of the expectations of what the Fed will or won't do. Either way, these markets, yeah, whether you like it or not, boy, oh boy, they just continue to trend higher. Mark, let's now look ahead to next week, and especially the central banks that are meeting. We don't have a Fed meeting, but we do have some other central banks. Break down who's meeting and some of the expectations around those meetings.
Sure. So three important, I'd say, high-income country central banks meet. Beginning off with New Zealand, there's been speculation in the last week or so that New Zealand could raise rates this year based on rising inflation, recovery of the economy. They don't have the same COVID challenges right now that Australia does. So from the RBNZ, look for some validation of market expectations that they're further along, further toward a hike than people might have suspected before. Two other central banks meet, Bank of Canada. That's going to be interesting because, as you remember, back in April, the Bank of Canada began tapering, reducing its bond purchases, and suggested that the output gap would be closed in the second half of next year, which told the market when to expect the first rate hike. Since then, Canada's reported a couple of disappointing employment reports until today, came in better than expected. On balance, I would expect the Bank of Canada, I think it's a close call, but I think the Bank of Canada will continue to taper, so it can finish its bond buying, whether it's late this year, early next year. And that leads us to the last central bank, large central bank to meet, and that's the Bank of Japan. Its meeting concludes next Friday. And even though they're not going to do much for the economy, not much that they can do for the economy anymore, which looks like it contracted again here in Q2. But what it could do is two things. One is recognize that now that Tokyo is in a state of emergency, and spectators won't be at the games, the Olympic Games in Tokyo, that this is going to impact GDP. And we could see them revise lower their forecast for GDP. On the other hand, they seem to be at the cutting edge of central banks that want to use monetary policy to help fight climate change. And so they've indicated they will make some announcement about a new facility. And what many people suspect it's going to be is a facility in which banks can borrow from the Bank of Japan at attractive yields to re-lend to the green sector or to companies doing R&D to help reduce emissions. And so those are the three central banks, RBNZ to confirm, likely validate expectations that they are closer to a rate hike. The Bank of Canada perhaps can continue to taper. And then the Bank of Japan, sort of fiddling with the edges, adjusting their forecasts, and perhaps the first central bank to give us a green facility.
All right, Mark, we'll wrap it up here. A lot to take in, especially when it comes to what's coming up and those interesting moves in the currency markets. Boy, oh boy, look, this week was interesting, but then again, we're closing the week with the trends in a way almost continuing. So let's see how the rest of this month plays out. But central bank meetings next week, it sounds like the trend is, again, more towards tapering. We'll see if the Fed eventually follows. Mark, thanks as always for your time. Again, I will post a link to Mark to Market website. That is Mark's blog, where you can stay up to date with his daily thoughts. Mark, thanks for your time. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. Good luck.